Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome to part two of our interview with Kitty Janis about her very haunted life talking with the dead. Just as sometimes we almost put, a label on ghosts or spirits or the public will put these labels on, like, oh, they must have like super thinking powers too. It could be as simple as, I saw that in a movie once. I'm dead now. I'm going to try that. And you know, maybe there's really no...
Right, because it seemed like such a ridiculous idea, and I wasn't trying to communicate with spirit. I was busy at work, and this thing just popped in and made its presence known, and it was trying to be so aggressive and vicious or whatever, and then I figured that wasn't going to work, and I was like, I think maybe it had, because everybody thinks, why are all these spirits always from Victorian times, or they're old? No! You know, spirits are for obvious... There's billions of dead people, and they come from all time frames, and maybe he did see it in a movie. I think you may have a very good point, that maybe he did think, maybe this will work, I don't know. You know? Mm-hmm. It's a very good point, that maybe spirits, you know, remember seeing things. I couldn't tell you. I wasn't thinking, oh, I saw this in a movie, this is what he's trying to do. He was obsessed.
Sure.
With first the soda can, and then I figured out maybe he's trying to get in the soda can.
Yeah.
And maybe he thinks I'm going to drink it. And it kind of, those thoughts occurred to me over the course of, you know, like 15, 20 minutes or so, that I think that's what he was trying to do. And I finally just had to remove the can away from him.
Yeah.
So he couldn't do it. You know, it's weird how you think spirits are, they can go anywhere. They can travel anywhere. No, they actually will confine their energy just very small areas. You know, they'll confine their areas to a hallway, to a house, to a building, to a battlefield kind of thing. You think, why can't they be 20 miles down the road? You know, what is time and distance to them? But it's this one little hallway, spirits will not leave it. It's very odd.
I guess, why is that?
Like a little portal to some extent.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's a good question, because we bring that up quite often of, you know, well, what are the bounds of the spirit world, of ghosts? And it constantly contradicts itself as far as what one is seeming able to do and what another isn't able to do. Are they each bound by their own reality, of their own set of rules? Is there even a set of rules as far as, well, you can only haunt this house, you know, or you can only haunt this, you know, area? How, you know, what's your viewpoint on that?
Well, I have some chapters in my book that deal with, you know, like Stone Temple, a stone tape theory and water memory theory, that how like brick buildings always tend to be haunted because of the iron oxide that is in bricks. You know, old VHS tapes and old cassette tapes are magnetized iron oxide on these tapes, and it holds this energy. Water molecules in stone might also hold the energy. Quartz holds energy. So there's the materials in the ground itself that might retain the energy. But when we go back to thinking, what are the rules or what dictates where a spirit, you know, can be in a location that will have completely the same energy?
Mm-hmm.
Say, you know, like Stanley Hotel, but the ghosts only appear in room, you know, 419 or something. Why is that? And to get on kind of a personal thread, in 2017, I lost several family members, and one was my brother. My brother was a genius. No, he was a genius. He had an IQ of 162. He spoke 17 languages. He had 2 PhDs and 4 doctorates, you know, 4 master's degrees, and in linguistics and archaeology, and he was very, very bright. And he passed quite suddenly. And so I thought, well, okay, I can communicate with him now on this side. And he would kind of come to me at work a little bit. And I say people come to me at work a lot because I work these graveyard shifts, so it's just very quiet where I work. And it lends itself to me being able to do my job and to communicate at the same time. And I said, okay, Mike, you're over there, I'm over here. You know what I like to do. I'm obviously communicating with you now. Do something to prove that you can hear me, that you can do this. Okay, make this thing levitate. Make it happen. You know, do a trick for me. And he says, I can't. No, these are his words. He's dead. He's on the other side. I'm communicating with. These are his words. I can't do that. I'll get in trouble. There are rules over here. And he shows me this long scroll of, like, paper that would, you know, something out of, like, Harry Potter, and he unfurls it onto the floor. He says, there are rules on this side. He goes, I can't do that. I'll get in trouble.
Wow.
Okay. He didn't, you know, specify what those rules were, but it's a long set of rules. And so, yeah, they can't just come and start doing parlor tricks for us at our whim.
And I guess
I don't know who sets the rules. He wasn't able to, you know, elaborate on that. But this was my brother. I knew I was communicating with my brother. I saw my brother, and for him to, you know, say I can't do this, I mean, they would just, you know, shut him down completely. And he was not able to, you know, elaborate on it. But he says there are rules on that side.
So when there,
I got that. My dead brother.
When there are cases where things like that happen, where something does levitate or something, you know, that would break the rules, if you will. I mean, again, it's obviously just a matter of opinion, but are they breaking the rules? Is that spirit going to be getting in trouble for letting themselves be known, you know, in such a way?
I don't know. I think it depends on the information that they're trying to give, if they're just letting themselves be known, if they need some advice, if they need some guidance, if they need closure or healing on that side. I think reaching out on this side is perfectly permissible. If they're trying to come forward and do harm still to the living, I think a lot of times there are limitations to that.
Sure.
But you can imagine how many, you know, murderers and rapists and criminals have died.
Yeah.
And also, they are not limited by a physical body. It would be anarchy on this side if they still wanted to come out and hurt people. So I think in that respect, there's probably a lot of regulation on that side for people who have done wrong, that they are not able to just turn themselves loose and continue to wreak havoc on this side.
Yeah, I mean,
or we would cease to exist. Can you just imagine, you know, an evil person who is no longer limited by the physical constraints of a body,
sure,
or the law, you know, the damage that he could do on this side unless he were somehow watched and regulated on that side.
Yeah, but that's a very fascinating thing to think about. A lot of areas we're touching on today, going down roads that really haven't gone down much at all. And a very fascinating conversation. When was the? How did this all start for you as an adult? When you began to do research onto, you know, historical locations and such, and then begin to investigate them? Take us back to that point in your life. How did that all begin for you?
Oh, probably because I love historical locations. A lot of investigators do residential cases, but my love is with historical locations. My parents were antique dealers. I grew up with a house full of antiques, which might have contributed a little bit to some of this paranormal activity in the house. But I love old things. I love the stories that they tell. I love the quality of how things are built. And so just because I liked going to historical locations, I just started visiting them because of what they were. And, of course, one of our favorite ones out here in Southern California is the Queen Mary.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the most haunted locations in the country. And she's a beautiful ship just on her own. It's beautiful monolith to Art Deco architecture and art. But she is insanely haunted. And so in going there, you're almost stepping into, okay, you're going to go into a place that is haunted. And I would find other people who would be doing, you know, these paranormal investigations, and that's what introduced me into some of the early equipment that people were using, you know, the EMF detectors, you know, the K2 meters, you know, your digital recorder, some of the, you know, basic equipment that people use, and you're amazed at the amount of evidence that you can gather just from using your own intuition and validating it with, you know, simple equipment. And to this day, I still prefer audio evidence over, you know, a video or, you know, something captured on film, because I think it's a little harder to dissuade an EVP that is having an intelligent response to a question, as opposed to, you know, an orb or a shadow or something, and you're definitively saying this was a ghost that I captured on, you know, a game camera that was set up and was unmonitored, and I think nobody was in the room, kind of thing, as opposed to getting, you know, an intelligent response when you're holding a digital recorder and you know nobody else is in the room and you know that was a response that you got on your, in your hand.
Sure.
So I still kind of like the basic equipment, because when you start getting into some of the higher end equipment and you aren't sure how it's calibrated, exactly what it's filtering, it's a little harder to definitively say that is a piece of paranormal evidence from that type of equipment, as opposed to just going into these historic locations and connecting with the spirits that are there. So I think I just started doing it. I started finding people who were, you know, in groups and going to the historic locations and just kind of, you know, creating friendships that way, and just finding out, hey, there are spirits who hang out in these historic locations, and then just kind of going from there and doing the research and the evidence and finding out the stories linked to these historic locations and finding out who might still be puttering around decades later after they pass. But my true love is with historic locations.
Sure. What was it like? What was your viewpoint on EVPs prior to you having your first experience with one? Just having heard about it, were you skeptical, as if, you know, are you really catching something, or what was it like at the beginning for you when you started to capture some of those?
Well, when I initially heard about, you know, EVP, which is electronic voice phenomena,
yep,
it kind of made sense, because, you know, I'm familiar with, you know, what white noise is, and it, the whole concept of you just putting down a digital recorder and not hearing anything at the time and then playing back, it just really struck a chord with me. And I was attending a lecture on the Queen Mary one time, and we were taking a short break, and the room that the lecture was in was directly above the infirmary of the Queen Mary. So I said, I'm just going to take a quick break, and I had a digital recorder with me, and I'd never tried it before. And so I went down to the infirmary, and they just said, you know, just start asking questions and give yourself a little bit of time in between, you know, to give them a chance to answer. So I just asked. I said, can you tell me what year it is? And, of course, you know, I hear nothing at the time. And when I played it back, when I got back upstairs, I said, can you tell me what year it is? And I clearly got a voice that said 1943. And I'm like, holy bleep, you know, it works.
Yeah.
And I people have told me I kind of have a knack for getting EVPs. You know, I ask, you know, simple questions. I give them a chance to answer. And I tend to get a lot of audio evidence, you know, when I go out. I tend to get a lot of, you know, personal information from them. And one of my tricks, if I can call it a trick, is probably 75% of the EVPs I get is when I first turn on that recorder before I ask the first question. They seem to know when you're in there to do, you know, recordings. They seem to be, you know, anxious to talk. So I tell people, when you go into a room and you're going to do an EVP, you know, make sure everybody is quiet in the room. You hit that record button and you wait about 20, 30 seconds before you ask your first question. And about 75% of the time, I will get some sort of a voice or some sort of acknowledgement that they're in that room before I even ask the first question. And I think one of the best ones I got was, I hadn't even noticed it at first, and we were doing an EVP session in there, and we were playing it back and checking things, and one of the other investigators, her husband, who had no prior knowledge as to what an EVP was or a paranormal investigation was. He was listening to it. He goes, well, who's Rosemary? And we go, what do you mean, who's Rosemary? And he says, yeah, like right at the beginning, somebody says, Rosemary is her name. And we're like, well, I didn't hear that. And we played it back, and right when we hit record, you hear this woman's voice saying, Rosemary is my name. And there was nobody else in the room except the three of us, and none of us are named Rosemary. So that was like right at the beginning when we start recording it. And a lot of times I'll get that right when I hit record in the first 20, 30 seconds or something. Also, I'll get an intelligent response to a question I have not yet asked. And that happened a couple times, actually, when I was at, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dave Ullman's house on Cielo Drive, which is down on the same street as to where a lot of the Manson murders were.
Okay.
And he has what he calls an earthen room. It's a room that's actually exposed to the dirt hillside on which the house is built. And for many reasons, there's a lot of Native American energy connected to this hillside, to the canyon, directly to this earth. And several psychics had said that there was a Native American who fell down a hill, and he and his horse both died, and they've been able to connect to these spirits. So I was in that room one time with psychic Chris Fleming, and he and I, we all hit our recorders, and he asked the question, let me hear the sound of the horse, please. And when we play our recorders back, I think it appeared on my recorder and maybe his recorder, you hear this click, clock, click, clock, click, clock. At the very beginning when we hit record, before he asks the question, we got an intelligent response to a question we had not yet asked. And it's a dirt room. There's no, area to be going click, clock, click, clock, click, clock.
Sure.
So we got this intelligent response to a question we had not yet asked. And I've had that come up a few times, too. So that's kind of fascinating.
You see and hear various, strategies, if you will, of how people handle ghost investigations and how they handle trying to get EVPs or evidence. How would you say, in terms of approach, what are some of the best practices for getting a response? Is it relating to the individual, knowing your topic going in, knowing what you are wanting to ask? Is it opening up the conversation and just letting them go where they want with it? Or is it, and this is something I would probably say is not a good idea, but I will throw it out there because we see it, and that's what sometimes is the folks who almost try to antagonize the spirits to evoke a response.
I think, once again, it's a time where people's intuition comes in. If you go into a location and, this location is haunted by Joe the Robber, and if you only go in there and try to communicate with that particular spirit, you might be disappointed because somebody else might be in there, somebody else might be trying to come in, and you have to just kind of be open to what spirits might want to come into a particular area. Obviously, you want to try to communicate initially with a spirit that's known to be in there, but if you're just not feeling that that one's there, or if you're feeling that a different area of a location feels more active, go into that area. I like to go into places where people don't often go. If you stand in a certain room because that room is known to be haunted all the time and you're just not feeling it, you're just not getting anything, try it for about 10, 15 minutes. If you're just not feeling anything energetically is there, mm-hmm. go into a little, I don't want to say a crawl space, but some place that might be physically more difficult to get into. Because a lot of times they just want to be away from it a little bit, and they kind of, some areas are just too active with the living going through there. A lot of times a little alcove sometimes tends to be a lot more active. Mm-hmm. But stand in an area, give yourself a chance, 10, 15 minutes. Just try it. Be present. A lot of times people just set down a recorder with record. Oh, I'm going to see if I can get any EVPs in here.
Sure.
I always like to be in the room, and I'll do short sessions so I don't have to do hours and hours of, listening to it because I'll just lose my mind.
Sure.
I'll do maybe like 2-3 minutes of recording, and I'll do an immediate playback. am I hearing anything? Am I feeling anything? Do I get a garble that might be an EVP? Then I'll continue. If I get some sort of response, I'll say, you know, I think I heard you. You sounded like a girl. I couldn't quite hear what you were trying to say. You know, I think you said this. You know, can you elaborate on that? So I think I'll just start that conversation because I'm already kind of going back and forth with them. I'll do a short session. I'll play it back. If I hear something, be it male, be it female, be it, whistling, be it something, I'll respond to that. I heard you say this. Or if I got, you said help me. How can I help you? Do you need help crossing? Are you hurt? Do you need healing? And so I'll go ahead and just start that conversation back and forth as opposed to just sitting there for half an hour asking endless questions, going back to the hotel or the home or the room or whatever, and then listening. Well, I can't help them at that point.
Sure.
They were asking for help, 2 hours ago when I was standing in that room. So I think I kind of get that connection with them a little bit better by doing the shorter sessions, asking, 5-10 questions, doing a playback, and responding to what I hear at that point. Or, I'm not hearing you. Are you here? Are you somewhere else? Do you want to be left alone? Which I really hate asking. Because if you're standing in a place saying, do you want us to leave? And you get an EVP that says, yes, go away. You're like, well, do I respect that?
Yeah.
Or, I spent 5 hours driving here. Do I just ignore that response?
Yeah.
So I kind of hate asking that, but I will respect that. And if I do get an EVP that says, I get several EVPs from this cranky old lady on the Queen Mary. And another thing I do when I'm ending a recording, I'll say, I'm going to shut this off now and see if I heard you. And then I wait like another 30 seconds. Because the EVPs I didn't get at the beginning, I often get at the very end. And there's this cranky old lady I often get on the Queen Mary that will say, I'm going to shut this off now and see if I heard you. She'll whisper, leave it off! I think I've got 3 EVPs from her that says that, and I just crack up to no end.
And you can almost just picture this old woman sitting there saying that,
Yeah, I've had spirits on the Queen Mary say, what did he say? I'm like, I'm eating my breakfast, or I've got whistling. A lot of people get the cat, like meowing. We get meowing on the Queen Mary. But yeah, this cranky old lady, she'll scream, leave it off, when I tell her I'm going to shut it off. So yeah, that's kind of funny.
It is funny.
But I will respect that if they want me to leave a location. And sometimes I'll say, okay, I'm going to just be here a few more minutes for this other spirit or to gather up my things, and then I will leave. I thank you for your time. I always show them the respect.
That wraps up part 2 of our interview with Kitty Janis about talking with the dead. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
2 ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.